welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. Happy Friday to you. And my new book is almost here. No is a four-letter word. Comes out August 29th. 20 principles on how you can achieve all the goals and hopes and dreams in your life like I did. It's out August 29th, but you can order it now at my Amazon store, amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. 20 principles, like I said, of how I made my dreams come true and how you can do it as well. It's going to help you live the life you want to lead. Pre-order it now, amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. I will be reading an excerpt from it maybe next week. So, also, if you haven't downloaded the new Podcast One app, what are you waiting for, man? Just hit the App Store or Google Play, download the app, and start watching all the cool 360 VR videos, over 1,000 of them on the app. You'll feel like you're right here in the studio with your favorite podcasts, and the app also lets you interact with other podcast fans and access behind-the-scenes content. Really cool. Not another podcast app like it available, to be honest with you. So download it and get to exploring all the cool special features. All right. Coming up today, making their podcast debut, I got Breezango. That's right, Tyler Breeze and Fandango. Fandango. You're going to hear how this crazy tag team came together most randomly, how they both got involved in Southpaw Regional Wrestling, one of my favorite activities that I've done in a while. If you haven't watched the series, go check it out online. New episodes are going to be released momentarily. Season 2 is coming up. Clint Bobski will be there. Breeze and Fandango also talk about their WWE tryouts, getting signed to NXT, developing their respective characters, their favorite matches, the do's and don'ts of stinky gear and personal hygiene on the road, all sorts of fun stuff. And let me tell you, one problem that Fozzy does not have when we tour is stinky gear and no issues with hygiene. We have a very clean wardrobe case. And speaking of the road, we are out to rock you. We have a bunch of shows coming up on the Judas Rising Tour here in the United States, out with Gemini Syndrome and The Stir. Starting off in Minneapolis at 93X Fest. Then 26, it's the last train to Clarksville, Tennessee. Fort Wayne, Indiana, Columbus, Ohio, Detroit, Michigan, Libertyville, Illinois, Janesville, Wisconsin, Buffalo, New York, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Worcester, Massachusetts, Wilmington, Delaware. Yeah, that's it, Wilmington, Delaware. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Is it Wilmington, North Carolina? Are we doing Wilmington, Delaware and Wilmington, North Carolina? Is that true? It could be a typo, but check it out and let me know and tell me what you think, if it's real or not. Yeah, that is not a coincidence. It's not a typo. Wilmington, Delaware, and then Wilmington, North Carolina. There you go. And Winston-Salem. That is the Judas Rising Tour in the States. Then we're going to Europe. Dublin, Belfast, Chester, Manchester, London, Sheffield, Glasgow, Newcastle, Birmingham, Amsterdam, Aschaffenburg, Pratteln, Roncade, Rome, Vienna, Munich, Essen, Hamburg, Genk. All of these shows featuring the best VIP meet and greet in the business. We have a pre-show mini concert for all of you VIPs. You get to see us play before we play. And the Fozzy VIP experience is available at FozzyRock.com. Come rock with us, okay? Speaking of rocking, let's keep Judas at number one on the Sirius Octane Biggins Countdown for the fourth week in a row. It is for the three weeks now. It's been number one. Congratulations to us. Thanks for all the support. And we're also a top 20 at Active Rock Radio charting at number 20. So we have a top 20 single, guys, and a number one satellite radio single. This is Judas by Fozzy right here on Talk to Jericho.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will track you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone. And I will drag you down and sell you out. Embraced by the darkness, I'm losing the light. Encircled by demons, I fight. What have I become? Ever loved, I pushed them all away. And
Jericho.
All right, so I'm here with one of the most popular teams right now amongst the amongst my friends, Breezango, which of course is the amazing amalgamation of Tyler Breeze and Fandango. How did you ever think of that name?
Breezango?
quite the story, actually. Dango, go ahead.
I think we were thinking Fubreeze right out the gate, right?
I mean, yeah, it's kind of there.
Makes yeah. more sense,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. yeah. Trying to get some free Fubreeze so we can spray our gear down. But I think, was it right from Vince, right?
Yeah, he loved the name. And
he loved Breezango.
He loved it.
That was coming right from him.
Yeah, so then, you know what? We love it too.
It's actually the best name I've ever heard in my life. Did you ever hear why Fubreeze wasn't used?
I'm assuming copyright.
Got it, right?
You know, restrictions like that.
You know who's a big Febreze user is Kane.
Wow.
He will Febreze the shit out of his stinky
grills. Entire house.
Yeah, everything at his house.
I would take disinfectant spray on European tours with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would spray it all down on my gear after matches when I remember to take them out of my bag if I wasn't drinking that night, which would happen for a while.
Classic,
just about every night, yeah. Yeah. So when I actually remember to bring the gear out of the bag and spray it down, I was spraying my gear down with disinfectant. But what I didn't realize is that you're not supposed to spray that on your skin. So it's, you know, spray your couch down or whatever when your dogs pee on it, but you're not supposed to spray it down and then, you know, rub it against your crotch or your legs after when you're wearing long tights. So I'm getting little red dots all over my legs when I'm getting back from these Europe tours, and I'm like, what the hell?
You know, skin's just slowly dying off.
Yeah, so.
Is it bed bugs or what?
I don't know. But and then my girl's like, no, you can't rub this stuff all over you. And, you know, you're dousing, you're getting back to the hotel room and racing down to catering to drink. So, you know, if I remember to take it out, I'm in there just, you know, spraying it down.
Right,
and
right.
So I, Febreze would have been a lot better than
must have been.
Yeah. yeah. Full circle there, yeah.
Quick question, world. That's your smelliest gear you've ever encountered. And I'll throw out.
Feed me more.
Oh, really? Lie back. Smelly gear.
I was going to toss an Eric Rowan janitor suit in there.
Now, Ryan, nice. Ryan, if you're listening to this, I love you. I really do. But the was his hand things, his gloves. The gloves. Yeah, I don't know if they were gloves or like MMA gloves. Or
they're almost like weightlifting gloves, old school, with fingers cut.
Gets that hockey glove smell.
Yes. Yeah.
I love you, bro. I love you, dude. I love you, bro, but your hands are stinky.
You know those never got washed, either.
Yeah. I love you, man, but you had stinky hands, so whatever. Let's move on from it.
That's something guys can say that.
What about you, like, back in the day?
I would say, well, Mark Henry at one point, but I also love
the whole thing, like singlet and everything, or knee pads?
Maybe, and Mark will even tell you this. This is probably about 2001. Rather wear a ski suit doused in cat piss, where it's full on, like, where the gloves are attached to the like I can't even get out of it. Ooh. That would be worse than better.
And like going back to my disinfectant story, the reason why I brought it is because the tour before, you'd get on the bus after a show, you drive 4 hours, maybe you have a couple drinks, maybe you forget to take your gear out of your bag and it kind of sits in there overnight.
Which really sucks. Yeah,
and you wake up at the crack of 5 p.m. to get on the bus to do the show again, you know. And maybe you wrestle again. Maybe you put the same stinky gear from the night before back into the same bag. And maybe you have another drink that night and forget to
maybe
take
it.
So I'm actually was a stinky guy on a tour. And I think Roman's like, hey, man.
You're the guy.
So that tour led to the disinfectant tour, which my gear smelled better.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sacrificed by breaking out all of my legs by dousing my stuff. And,
well, you can actually wash it too, right?
You can, yeah. But I mean, when you jump on a bus with a bunch of free European beer, you're thinking,
yeah,
I'll clean my gear. And then when you get to the hotel, that's the last, you know, you just run up to catering and drop your stuff off, and then it's go time.
It's like you said, it's like being the two Canadians here, Breeze and I, when you played hockey and didn't take your hockey gear out of the bag. Mm-hmm. The worst feeling in the world is when you open it, it's like, oh no, it's wet, still smelling, and hits you with that.
Even if you did, and you try to wash anything on it, within one little wear or whatever, it's right back there. It's right back there.
Now, when I went to Hart Brothers Wrestling School in 1990, they had a contract for us to sign. On that contract, it said one of the rules was you always had to make sure that your nails were clipped,
that your breath was fresh and that you were wearing deodorant.
Whoa. Really?
So that was an actual Calgary rule.
That's surprising.
Then they went and shit at each other and shaved their backs.
Yeah. But as long as your nails were good, it was good.
But even doing indie shows up in Maine and around Quebec back then, you would wrestle and then you leave your gear sweaty in the back of your car and drive to another town. Mm-hmm. And then if you didn't take your stuff out, it'd be frozen the next day. I remember I've done that a couple times where, you know, you just... a young kid and you're like, yeah, I'll leave my, you know, four guys in a hotel room at Super 8 and you leave your gear bag in the car and it's 20 below up in, you know, Bangor, Maine or wherever and then you take your gear out the next day and it's all frozen, you know, from
absolutely.
This,
from, you know, what's funny though, I just am putting it together. So we have three northern cats, but from three separate, you're East Coast.
Yeah.
You're West Coast coming from Vancouver. I'm right in the middle in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So when you grew up, it's funny because we just did Southpaw Regional Wrestling, which we'll talk about more, but that really is so close to the wrestling that I used to watch when I was in high school. Like, that's Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
What did you have something on that side?
For me, I was a big tape collector, so I would get the Power Pro out of Memphis. I loved Power Pro because that back then that was kind of a feeder system for WWF. Right. So they had Brian Christopher. I think the Angle was down there for a little while. A lot of guys in Memphis that were right around USWA time were going
pre-FCW.
I would say late, it was a 98-99. Yeah, a lot of guys were going to Power Pro, and it was like a studio shot TV show, which I really loved. And that was kind of my, I guess, Southpaw
region. Very cheap.
Yeah,
cheap,
and it was a studio feel, and I just, I love Power Pro Wrestling. I loved it.
What'd you, please?
You know, it's kind of crazy, man, because I grew up just like small little town, and I had two channels growing up.
Where did you grow up?
Penticton was the actual name.
I love Penticton, by the way.
Yeah, just, you know, small little town, and I had just, you know, that box TV with the bunny ears on it, and I had two channels, 2 and 7, and WWF was the only thing that came on. It was WWF Superstars on Saturday afternoon, and besides that, I had no clue that any other wrestling existed. I didn't know about independence. I didn't know about anything. And we used to have like video updates where, you know, like the Blockbuster of where I was. And you'd go there and you'd get this deal, and it was like seven movies for 7 days for $7. And
good deal.
My family would go, we'd choose some movies, and I got to choose like two movies. And I would always choose like these random wrestling ones. But it would have these guys that I had no clue who they were. Like, it'd be like Sting and Vader and all these guys. And I go, they're not in WWF. Like, I have no clue who these guys are. Or I'd play like a WCW video game. And I go, this must just be like, you know, made up. Because I don't know who any of these guys are. And I actually had a guy. His name was Ralph. He would he actually got cable. He got cable.
Not Ralph.
It was he was one of those guys.
That works here.
Yeah. He was one of those guys who he had all the channels, so he'd record Raw for me.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he actually messed up and he recorded an episode of Nitro. And all of a sudden I'm like all my favorites on Raw, and all of a sudden it ends and I see Goldberg against Raven for the US title, and I go, what is this? Like, who are these guys? Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's not like I could just hop on the internet and be like, oh yeah, let's go check out this.
Right.
I was like, WCW, that's a thing. And then I slowly like figured stuff out, but I was like the perfect fan of like, okay, you know, we'll watch this and then this, and then I had no clue about ECW, no clue about independence, no clue about anything.
World opens
exactly.
You, right? Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just slowly you figure stuff out, and it's like, wow, there's so much more than I actually thought there was.
Can I just do a quick segue of Heath Slater's pronunciation of Penticton?
Oh, every time I have this conversation.
He did actually once say Pumpkin Town.
So him, R-Truth actually
Pumpkin, Penticton, Canada, where Breeze is from.
When we were there, we've done one show there.
Yeah.
WWE's only done one show there.
Maybe ever.
And, ever. And R-Truth was on the show. Mm. And, you know, part of his whole thing is, hey, what's up, town, wherever we are.
Mm.
And he kept asking me, he goes, Pennington? Are we in Pennington?
Penicillin.
I said, no. And he could not get it right for the life of my
Penicillin,
said,
what's up?
Good luck, man. Good luck.
Penicillin, what's up?
What's up?
Truth will butcher a town.
Every time.
Like, even if it's like St. Louis, it'll be like,
Was it Australia? Austria?
Yes.
That's
a true story. Okay. That really happened. What's up, Austria? And we're like in Sydney.
Yep.
Australia.
Yeah.
I love it.
So when you guys, because we mentioned something that was interesting, because now obviously there's so much internet and so much ways to find out how to get into wrestling, you know, and you guys are a lot younger than me, but still came in at the time where you couldn't really just go online and find out. Like, how did you find it?
For me, in terms of training,
just how you get started.
There was a local company called Eastern Wrestling Alliance. They were actually they were on the MTV True Life I Want to Be a Pro Wrestler. It was one of the companies that was on there, and they started running local independent shows up around the Northeast and Maine, where I'm from. I think it was 98, 99. Tony Atlas was booking for them. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the local shows, and, you know, like, you see the flyers. It was actually MTV that kind of, like, smartened me up to independence. They're like, wow, there's other smaller shows
trying to make it or something. Is that what it was?
They were doing a show about people trying to get into professional wrestling. Gotcha. And I think they did different organizations. Mm-hmm. So they did Les Thatcher's, was HWA Heartland. They had a kid trying to get in there. They did Tony's promotion up in the Northeast in Maine, which was mm-hmm. EWA. And I think they did a couple other things. And they followed the WWF around at the time. So it was a documentary on MTV, I think 98, 99. And I'm like, holy shit, there's other smaller shows out there. Mm-hmm. And they actually were running in Westbrook, Maine, where Scott Taylor's from. Mm. And we went to the local indie shows. And then I kept bothering one of the local guys who had a ring set up in his backyard and up in Buxton, Maine. And my buddies and I were, you know, wrestling in the backyard. And we just would drive to this guy's house and be like, hey, can we practice in your ring? And he's like, no, get the hell out of here. You know, it was like six kids on a little escort with Jeff Hardy armbands on and ponytails. You know, and my buddy's car license plate says Luchador on it.
Nice.
And the guy, like, would see us pull up and just, like, lock the door and be like, nah, man, no. And then eventually he's like, I'm selling my ring to another guy named Larry Huntley, who was just breaking into the business. So Larry set the ring up behind his work outside in, like, Buxton. He ran, like, a fire extinguisher store. So there's a ring, like an old Mexican 16 by 16 wooden ring set up in the backyard. He's like, you guys can train. You got to sign waivers. And then we just started training in, out in the Mosquitoes. And mm-hmm. and that's kind of how it started right there, you know, just get trained. And we didn't really know what we were doing. So Steve Ramsey, who was Scott Taylor's tag partner on the indies, centerfold Steve Ramsey and Scotty Too Hotty were a tag team back in the late 80s. Scotty, I think Scotty signed in like 93, 94.
He was with
WWF from like 93, 94 to like 08. Mm-hmm. So Scotty, I think Scotty and Taker at one time, maybe like Bob Holly, or maybe like he was in the top.
Yeah, the
he was in
the top.
Yeah, so Scotty was gone. Steve was still up in Maine. So Steve started training us, and then we just started taking bookings as kids. But we were so young, we were like 15 and 16.
Right.
My friends and I, so we had to wear hoods on the indies because none of the promoters wanted to book us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
what was your first wrestling name?
The Portuguese Sun Dragon. Because.
Why not?
You never heard of the Portuguese Sun Dragon?
Yeah, why not?
So we were running. Yankee Pro Wrestling would run New Bedford, Mass. In Fall River, Massachusetts in the late 90s. So it was a big Portuguese market down. There's a lot of Portuguese people there. So they're like, we're going to be a babyface.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Grab this hood. I can't remember who it was. I think some Mexican wrestler that they probably bought the hood from like a flea market. You're going to be the Portuguese Sun Dragon tonight. And I was over.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Just trying to do high spots, you know?
Yeah, Portuguese high spots.
Yeah.
How about you, Breeze?
Mine was a little different because, like Dango was saying, man, he knew about, like, the independence and he knew about all this stuff.
I, on the other hand,
was, like, in a whole other world that had no clue, like, WWF was this huge thing that I had no idea how to even start to get
and
there.
And Penticton is this beautiful city right next to Kelowna.
Yep.
And it's like all on the Peach Belt or whatever, by the lake.
Yeah, like the Okanagan Valley is what they call it. It's all home of the wineries Pogum. And orchards. Yes, exactly. Yes,
you grew up in paradise, man.
Yeah, it really is paradise. It's a beautiful place.
Which is great, but it's also, if you're trying to, you know, start a career somewhere, you have no clue where to start.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, once I kind of started figuring stuff out, I was watching, you know, all this stuff. Remember Beyond the Mat?
Yeah.
It comes out.
It
comes out, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, like a look into how it even starts. So I start figuring this stuff out. I see, like, WCW has, like, a power plant, and, like, you have to go there and you train and you do it. And I'm watching, like, they showed all the, you know, the squats and all this stuff. And I go, oh my God, this is going to be ridiculous. And I end up finding out somehow that WWE has, like, you know, like the farm leagues or developmental or whatever you want to call it. And at the time it was OVW. And so I went, okay, if I go here, I can learn how to wrestle, and it's associated with WWE. So then, like, that's how you must do it.
Right.
And but being Canadian, no clue how to get a visa, no clue how to come down, no clue how to, like, do I just go down and live, or, like, can I work or anything? So I started kind of doing some research, And no, you cannot just go down unless you have a bunch of money saved. So I started just saving money, like, oh man, I gotta come up with, like, you know, $10,000 at least to go down there for this 3 months to train. And I ended up calling somebody down there. I think her name was, like, Julie. Mm. And I talked to her and I go, hey, like, do you guys have, like a hotel, or is there, like, apartments, or is there, like, you know, a place where people can stay? And she goes, no, that's all up to you guys. And you got to pay the initial fee to get in, and then nothing is really guaranteed from there. And as I'm kind of trying to figure this out, I'm, you know, just about to graduate. I'm trying to figure out what's my next step. And then all of a sudden Lance Storm's school pops up, and it's literally right beside me. Mm-hmm. And I go, oh, I don't have to do anything different. I can just literally drive my car over. And
it's like 12 hours away.
Exactly. Right? And live in Alberta and train with Lance, who, you know, is a great, great teacher and great guy to learn from, who literally was he just finished in WWE at the mm-hmm. time. And so, you know, why wouldn't I go there to learn? And so then it just kind of seemed simple. I graduated high school in June or July or whatever it is, and I moved over to Alberta in November, started training in January.
What was your first wrestling name?
Matthias Wilde.
Ooh.
Yeah, you should see my early pictures.
He's wild, baby.
Yeah, man. Against the garage door. Like, yeah. It's cool.
It's funny how, like, when you guys say, like, Canadian towns, I just assume Penticton, Calgary, and Winnipeg are right next to each other.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, when even, like, being friends with Jinder and you,
yeah.
like, you guys and, you know, Victor from the Ascension, the road trips you guys would
do. It's so big.
It's like, yeah. you do, like, 12-hour road trips for Indies. Show. Like, Victor would be like, no, we do, like, we do one shot here, drive 12 hours,
yeah.
drive all the way back, and then they do the death tours, too, which yeah. I think you probably did. Yeah. So you guys did some driving, man.
When I first went to ECW, we had a show in Philadelphia, and the next day the show was in New York. I'm like, well, what time are we leaving at? Like, you know, 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
And I said, no, we're leaving tomorrow, like 3 in the afternoon.
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
You could drive from Philadelphia to New York in 2 hours?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it, because they're different states, but yep. in Canada.
And that was the good thing for the guys, like the Reckless Use, the Quackenbush, guys that were in the Philly scene back then, you know, the Hero, and then like Punk coming over from mm-hmm. Chicago. That was kind of the mecca of the Indies in the late 90s, you know, is
right.
being in the Northeast.
Right.
A lot of guys would kind of, whether you move from Penticton, Winnipeg, or, you know, Portland, Maine, they'd kind of want to centralize themselves mm-hmm. in the New York, Philly area, because there were so many indie promotions at the time
yeah.
getting press from PWI
yeah.
and being a guy from way up in the woods in Maine, you know, an hour and a half from Quebec or way where you're from, you seem like, you know, you're a lifetime away from what's going on in
the
magazines.
Going on
that's
there.
The insane part about, like, you had, like, okay, you could go here while you're doing, you know, kind of like, you know, like you said, PWI is covering all these independent.
I mean, I was pretty far away, three to
yeah.
4 hours just to get to the closest show, unless they were running Maine. But for you, you were literally, you could have been,
anywhere.
You know, in Anchorage for,
I did,
you know.
Dude, I did, not the death tours, but I did Ernie Todd. And Ernie Todd,
is that in BC or is that?
He was all over the place. He was based out of Winnipeg.
Oh, okay.
But what he would do is he'd do Indian reservation shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
that's what the death tours are for anyone watching. You're doing Indian reservation, which
yep.
can be 24 hours from the next.
All over the place.
Yeah.
And he would book them the worst places possible, as far away as possible. So he would, I think I ended up seeing one of the things, and it was like, okay, so they'd pay him, you know, $3,000 or $5,000 or whatever it was, and he'd bring in 6 guys.
Mm.
And we'd set up the ring, and then we would have 3 singles matches and a 6-man tag.
Wow.
And he would book them. We were all based in Calgary, essentially, but we would start off, we'd go over to Winnipeg to meet up with him, and then we would have a show around Winnipeg somewhere, and then we'd drive back to Alberta,
mm-hmm.
then over to Ontario,
wow.
then back to Saskatchewan,
wow.
and we'd do kind of, it was all over the place, and it was literally show up, set up the ring, do the show, drive.
Wow.
And like sometimes we'd have to load the ring into a little boat and like boat it across and set it up on some, you know, that you,
oh,
you
yeah.
know the places.
What, it's hardcore stuff.
There's run down little gyms
yeah.
or whatever it is. And
what were the tours that you could only do in the winter because the lakes would freeze over?
Those were like the reservation tours.
Okay. You can only do them when
Wait,
it was.
I think you could maybe do them in the summer, but the roads would be so long to get.
It's like
to get
ice road trucker shit,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Death
you
know, Tour was
yeah.
a little more north. I think.
Death
it
Tour
was, right
was
up
all
there.
Northern Manitoba.
Yeah.
Which could be in the. I never did a winter one. I did a summer one.
Okay.
Which was bad enough because that's when all the mosquitoes are around.
Yeah.
So you know your driving is different, but the mosquitoes are everywhere. Was the winter you just go straight across the ice?
Yeah.
Talk is Jericho.
So how did you guys end up in the WWE then?
Dang. I was working and training at Kowalski School in 2003-04, and I was just doing indies up there, and I decided, I was laying brick at the time doing construction, and I'm like, you know what, I'm not getting any better on the indies around here. I saved up a bunch of cash, and I just packed up my car one day. I think I was going, you know, with like a breakup with a girlfriend, so I'm like, you know what, this, and I'm going to give this wrestling
a shot. Yeah, it's my time.
Or it's one of those deals where I'm in a serious relationship. You're thinking about putting wrestling on the back burner. I've been wrestling indies from 99 to about 05, I think it was, up in the Northeast. And you start to realize you're spending more money to wrestle. You know, it's one of those ruts you're going through where you're having some bad matches or something, and you're just like, you know what, maybe it's time for me just to do 9 to 5. So I'm doing 9 to 5, laying brick up in Maine, doing roofing, just whatever, building houses in a relationship. And then, you know, I'm trying to put wrestling on the back burner, and it's just not working out. It's not for me. You know, I got the gypsy blood in me. So I'm like, you can if you truly love this business, you can try to get out of it, but like,
always come back.
It's like you always go back into it.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's not like I was on the road full time scheduled. I'm working 3 shows a month, you know, 4 shows a month. I'm not running a full time. It's indie stuff. Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Instead of this, I'm gonna pack my stuff up, save some cash, and move down to McDonough, Georgia, which was at the time Deep South Wrestling with Jody Hamilton. I had a couple friends down there, Mike Knox and Connor from The Ascension. I met them before a couple years back. They didn't really know I was coming, so I just kind of showed up. A friend of mine put in a word for me that was friends with Bill DeMont at the time. Like, hey, this kid's coming down. He doesn't have a contract. He's getting a job at Applebee's. Can he join your night school? To Jody. Nick Backer's dad, Jody Hamilton, The Ascension. And so I just show up, knock on the back door, give him some cash. Like, yeah, you can start training. But then I didn't have any place to stay, so I was kind of crashing in my car for a little while before my job started at Applebee's. And then one day, I think Ryan saw me, and he's like, Connor from The Ascension, he's like, hey, man, just come live with us. And some
That's cool.
Yeah, so he kind of took me in, and I was training with Bill during the day and going to work at night at Applebee's, making $200 a week and snagging some shrimps and hiding by the dumpster so I could put on socks.
But what's it like working at Applebee's?
It sucked, man, because I was waking up in the morning and doing 500 squats and push-ups with Bill and then doing training, and everyone else was getting out of practice and going to the, you know, Chinese buffet and relaxing. And I would have to get out and go to Applebee's and cook, because I got a cooking job. Well, I took a cooking job so I could keep size on and eat for free, because I knew I wouldn't have any money. Carney. Yeah.
That sounds like you.
Yeah, just putting steaks in my pocket and stuff.
You know what I used to do when I worked at the pizza place next to close to my house? Is I would order a pizza, my favorite kind, about 20 minutes before I went into work. And the rule was, if they don't pick it up in an hour, it's fair game.
Well, this is George Johnson B. And I want a pepperoni ground beef pizza. I'll be there in 40 minutes.
And then you get there, all this pizza. Oh, really?
Nobody wanted it?
What a dirtbag. What kind of piece of shit would call and order a pizza and not come get it?
Yeah, no kidding. I guess we have to eat it again. Beautiful. It seems to happen every night.
Every time you're here.
You got to stay away from him. What about you, Breeze?
So I ended up going and training with Lance.
Yeah.
3-month course, kind of start to finish. And at the end, he would kind of give you, you know, like a, hey, you should continue, or nah, you probably should
very
continue.
Honest Lance.
If you know Lance, he's very blunt.
Which is cool, because a lot of guys, including myself, would just take kids' money, you know? But that's cool of Lance, because how many, like, Carney trainers and promoters have you ran into?
I think Lance is the best.
Yeah, but that's cool. I've never heard that before, but hearing that now.
Keep at it, kid.
But, like,
he'd full out tell you, man.
But that's really cool, Lance. To actually not be a scumbag like a lot of you know, indie guys out there just stealing kids' money.
He was the best, man. Like, he'd clue you in on, like, hey, this is currently, you know, this is what they like, this is what they don't like. As far as I know, if it's changed, like, this is the most recent thing that you should know about WWE and about wrestling in general. And he goes, you know, he'd give us talks about kind of money, you know, he'd give us talks about everything. And really helpful. And at the end, you know, he kind of sat everybody down, gave them their evaluation, and he said, you know, hey, you can do, you know, kind of everything that you need to do. You know, you're a smaller guy, you know, being Canadian, you're not really kind of hitting any demographic that they're looking for. He goes,
small Canadian.
Yeah, he goes, who's not related to anyone or whatever. Yeah, you know, you're kind of fighting the grain here, but you know, if you want to give it a try, you know, I'm behind you. You can do it. So I said, okay. He ended up getting my first booking, actually, in Lethbridge. And I went down there, had my first match, and it kind of started from there. I was wrestling, kind of doing the Cross Canada tours. Did that for 4 years. And it kind of was kind of the same as Dango. It was just kind of like the same thing. You're not really, you're getting better because you're getting in the ring all the time, but you're not really advancing anywhere. It's just kind of like, you know, you're that guy who just keeps hanging out, and you're, you know, hanging out with the other guys who have been wrestling for 20 years and haven't really done anything. Yes. And so finally I thought, you know what? WWE is where I want to go. Why not just go right to the source and, you know, see what they have to say. If they say, hey, we need you bigger. Hey, you suck. You know, I'll go from there. And I ended up going to an open tryout, and you had to pay your way down.
In Orlando?
Tampa at the time.
Okay, that's the same thing Jinder did.
Yes, I was actually at the one. So
really?
Me and Jinder went to the same tryout.
Okay.
We end up paying. We go down there. There was 50 guys, I think, at the first one. And right away, like, I show up and I look and I'm like, man, there's some big guys here. And, you know, this is going to be hard. There's 50 guys. And they guaranteed one contract at the end. But they said we might sign some other people and everything else. We show up. We start doing some stuff. And as soon as the guys start moving, I'm like ruling guys out. Like, okay, definitely not him, not him, not him. And I'm like, okay, this is like 20-ish maybe guys that are capable and that they're kind of looking at here. We end up doing stuff. And, you know, we go through the whole 3 days, I think it was. And at the end, they give a contract to somebody and it was Jinder. And they end up signing him. I go, oh, man, that's cool. Like, I wrestle with him all the time, whatever else. I end up talking to Steve Kern, Dr. Tom, everybody who was down there at the time. And I said, you know, hey, how'd I do? You know, what can I work on? And they said, hey, you did great. You know, this is our first time seeing you. We just keep at it and everything else. So I said, okay, cool. You know, went back and started working and was looking for the next tryout that they were going to have. And I think within 2 or 3 months, they had another one. And I asked Lance, I said, hey, you know, what do you think? Is it too soon? Should I go back down? And he goes, let me ask. And he ends up calling Norman Smiley. And he goes, hey, should he head back down? And Norman said, yes, definitely send him back down. So I end up paying my way. This was at the time I was working for CP Rail. And I'm making good money. I'm like 21, 22. And I'm thinking like, okay, this is the last of my money. And I'm asking for time off. So they're starting to get hot at me for asking for this time off. And I go, I need another 3 days. I'm going down to this tryout. And this is the last of my money. If I don't get signed, like, my credit cards are maxed out. I don't know. I guess I'm just going to sit here and work this job. I end up going down and there's 80 people this time. And I just look around and I go, oh.
$1,000 each? How much did they pay each?
It was $1,500.
Oh my gosh.
$1,500
for
the
first
one. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Crazy, dude. $1,500 for the first one, $1,500 for the second one, plus your tickets down there, plus hotel.
So you're smart. I'm going to put you on the spot. It's $1,500 times 80. A lot.
So much. So much money.
Yeah, that's a couple of Range Rovers.
Yeah, dude. Right? So we end up going down.
Yeah.
First day I walk in, 80 guys, and I'm just looking, and I go, oh, man, there's no way. There's not a chance. And we start doing the same thing. We do like one drill, and I start ruling everybody out. I go, nah, these guys can't hang. We're good. And there was some weird little thing. After the first day, I end up asking Steve. I go, hey, Steve. I said, how am I doing? And he goes, I don't want to say anything, but right now you're in my top five. I said, okay, that's good. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I'll take that. And the next day, Ty Bailey and Johnny Ace come down. And they're like, they're saying yes or no. And so they come in, and everybody, you know, kind of stands up a little bit, and they start trying extra hard, and everything's going on. And they end up, they're standing there watching my ring, and we're doing something. It was some little drill. And Ty Bailey comes over, and he taps on my leg, and he goes, what number are you? And we had shirts with numbers or whatever, and I go, 80-something or whatever. So I see him and Johnny, and they're looking at me, and they're flipping through the thing, and they're kind of reading my thing. And I run one little thing, and I end up, my hair tie came out or something. And so I kind of like looking for my hair tie, and I look over, and Johnny's got my hair tie, and he goes, here. And I looked at him, and I kind of got this strange feeling of like, I think I just got hired. like really weird, dude. Like, I just went, I think that's it.
In the time-honored tradition.
Very, very weird.
It's funny. Like, I told you I went down to Deep South, but I didn't tell you how I actually got signed.
Yeah, right.
And what he just said reminded me. So Johnny and Ty come down, and this is April of 07. This is probably 2 or 3 weeks right before they shut down Deep South and moved everything to Florida. So Johnny walks in with Ty, same situation.
Thing,
everyone's
just, best behavior.
You know, everyone's nervous. We got to do the matches, and you know, in front of an empty arena where it's you could have the best match in the world, but it does. It seems like you're doing horrible. You know. But the same thing, Johnny or Ty comes up, what's your name? Mm-hmm. Are you signed? No, I come here and I train.
Yep.
And then I'm one of the unsigned guys. I think there was just me and another guy named Seamus, not to be confused with the Irish one, a guy from Montana. So I'm wrestling a guy named Keith Walker from Chicago. He lifts me up for a vertical suplex, and I had some cheap trunk, like indie trunks. And he lifts me up and stalls me up there, and I'm putting myself up in a suplex position right now. The side of my deal. I swear to God, yeah. And just my cash and prizes are just boom. And guess what? I got signed. Then I got signed Yeah.
It's up there. You let your ponytail out, or yeah. The ball so
I,
hang out.
But the rib is, the rib is, I told Keith, I go, hey man, we're gonna work in front of these cats. Just pull my deal out. Then I'm going to get a deal. Just pull my stuff out, and I guarantee I'll get a contract.
Yep. You impressed him, dude.
No, but at the time, I felt it out. We finished the match, and I'm like, this is it. I just wasted 4 months of my life and spending all this money. The girls just, you know, the girls in the training class just saw my deal. The guy that's trying to sign me just saw my deal.
Life's over, man.
I'm going to work at Applebee's today.
Life's over.
But then he signed me, so I was like...
Well, you're talking about you guys being a team. You guys both have such great charismatic characters, and I want to hear yours. But let's talk about yours, Dango, because it was you and I that were involved right off the bat.
Yeah,
your initial, basically, month or 2 months when you got here. Now, let me predicate the story.
Okay.
I did Dancing with the Stars, and I was talking to Vince during that time because I wasn't working here. And I told him, he talked to me on the phone. He was very interested by it. He goes, well, talk about the guys that dance there. I go, yeah, they're all like, man, they're really great athletes and and they pick up all the girls. He goes, what? They pick up girls? He goes, I wouldn't think they even like girls. I said, no, they pick up all the chicks. He's like, oh, I never would have guessed that. And I could hear it in his voice that he really disliked the idea of a male ballroom dancer.
Yeah.
Fast forward 6 months, whatever it was, here you are.
So this I don't know if probably not a lot of people. I don't know if you knew this. Hawkins and Rex were doing a stripper gimmick.
Tyler Rex
and Curt Hawkins. Right. I think they debuted once on SmackDown. They did it maybe
one or two things.
Really?
Maybe once they did a dance routine as like cops. Well, cops.
Really?
Or firefighters or something. So,
yeah.
It's weird, man. Life. But anyways, Rex ended up quitting. So Hawkins comes up to me and goes, "Hey, would you be interested in doing this dancing gimmick?" And I don't give a shit. I'll do anything. You know, I'm not insecure about going out there and making an ass. I'm like, I'm not doing anything at the time. I'm just coming on the road and doing dark matches. So I'm like, dude, anything that gets me on TV, I'll do it. So I think Hawkins went and pitched it to them, and they're like, you know what? That's a good idea, but let's just do it with Johnny Curtis at the time, because Hawkins wasn't really into it. So he wasn't really upset about not doing the stripper gimmick. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. So I was going down to NXT when they first started doing Full Sail, doing kind of a dick dancing gimmick. Fast forward a little bit, a couple of months later, now we're getting towards November, December of 2012. I think at around this time, Vince is having me come up and do dark matches as a stripper gimmick. And I think that sparks the idea around the end of 2012. Well, let's have him do ballroom dancing. So one week I show up to NXT and Triple H is like, hey, they were sending me to stripper school, dancing school.
Really?
So nice. I'm going to... school to learn how to strip, which is kind of weird. It's I don't have to explain it to you guys, but he's like, hey, don't do stripper school anymore, go to ballroom dancing school. At the time I was moving to Houston, so I moved out there and I'm going to ballroom dancing school at the time, just thinking that I'm going to do a ballroom dancing gimmick. I haven't really been smarting up that you and I are about to do what we're about to
and
do.
Nor had I.
No. So this is about November, December 2012, and we worked in April of 2013. So right. I'm going to ballroom dancing school, doing European tours as a character that hasn't been debuted on TV yet, as simply Johnny Curtis, the ballroom dancer with a rose in his mouth. And then I think just one day, I debuted as Fandango. I'm doing the deal where I won't debut unless they pronounce my name correctly.
Is that Vince's name, Fandango?
And Vince came up with the name Fandango. And I think just one day I show up to TV and I think you had it backstage. I interrupted it and it was like February of 13 and we had, 6 to 8 weeks to get ready.
I don't even know if we even had that
I think we had...
Because what happened?
End of February to what?
Yeah, maybe
April?
I think we had 4 weeks. Because what happened on my end was I was supposed to work with Ryback because he was really hot at the time.
Yeah.
And so I had made a deal with Vince for Ryback and then he changed his mind and I was pissed off because it was like, well, who am I going to be working against then?
Yeah.
Not this kid. He's great. I was like, the Fandango gimmick? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So then, once I kind of got it in my head, I said, okay, now we have to make this work. We had 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And I remember the first week was when I was messing with your name because I wanted people to know what your name was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we started working on your top rope leg drop every week.
Yeah.
Even some weeks they'd say, okay, this week you get on Fandango. No. He gets on me again. Everyone knows my shit.
Yeah.
They need to know his shit, right?
Yeah. I remember you started trusting me so much you would take it face down.
Yeah,
which is pretty. He would take it. I would lay him out, and you'd lay it face down and take it, which is pretty ballsy.
But the cool thing was, though, is that after the WrestleMania was done, the next night, the Monday Night Raw crew from wherever the fuck they're from were going nuts for Fandango. I think your song was top 10 in the UK charts.
Yeah, yeah.
You were all doing your dance, chanting your name, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And after that show, I went in the parking lot. Everyone was singing your song. I called Vince and said, listen to this.
Yeah.
So you just got a new baby face on your hands.
I know. Yeah.
Feel that as it was going?
I did. And, I didn't want to get too excited because I knew that it was that post-Mania crowd. So I knew that we were doing SmackDown in Boston the night after New York. So I go, you know what? If they're really into it, I think you worked the match. I interfered when I was standing ringside that night.
Yeah.
And I remember the Boston crowd wasn't as crazy as New York. So I go, you know what? It's that post-Mania crowd. They were still into it, but like, don't get too excited about this. But I give a lot of credit to you for that because I think we were given a tough deal with a short period of time and
with a guy who never seen you.
It's easy. I always say it's, and I think Regal told me this. It's easy to go out and pretend to be a tough guy in the ring, but it takes a real tough guy to go out there and pretend you're a sissy. I mean, really. Yeah, I mean,
that makes sense.
I mean,
it's great.
I could go out. I mean, if I can go out and pretend to be a flamboyant ballroom dancer, which I was more nervous about remembering my dance routine. Mm-hmm. My debut at WrestleMania with a bunch of Russian dancers than I was about the match because that was so foreign to me.
Yes.
Is trying to. I remember the first night I came out and you even pulled me aside because you've done some dancing and you're like, hey, you gotta. And it's just I was more insecure because I was comfortable in the ring. But the dancing and getting that character down, which was really, we kind of just did it really quick, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere. So, like, I'm trying to figure this shit out on the fly. But I don't think that we did bad at all. I think we did.
That next night with the reaction,
yeah,
was like the whole arena, man. The whole arena
accomplished. You know, how about you, Breeze? Because your character is also borderline. You know, if you could say the word gay or whatever, it's very flamboyant to where what is this guy? You know, what is his sexuality here?
And that was kind of the goal too of like making it right on the fence of like you don't know if he's into guys, girls. He's into himself is essentially the thing.
Did you get that from anybody or was the idea?
So it was kind of it was a whole thing, man. Like I think at the time I was down in FCW, I was down in Tampa. I was down in developmental for like 4 years and it was kind of like a do or die kind of thing of like, hey man, nobody cares about Mike Dalton, which was my character at the time.
And Mike Dalton?
Mike Dalton. And he was just this, you know, fighting baby face, you know, tan, blonde hair, whatever. I can do a drop kick. It's cool.
Yeah.
Nobody cared. Nobody cared about it. We weren't using it for anything. It was just, you know, hey, we need somebody to go out there and get beat up. Cool, Taz Dalton in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an evaluation that I had that I just kind of got ripped apart. And it was like, whoa, I knew like things weren't going that well, but I didn't know it was like, hey, man, we're going to fire you.
Wow.
And this was also, granted, this was like the third or fourth time that like it was like, hey, we're going to fire you. And by some miracle, I just held on. I was like the cockroach of FCW, man.
FCW Funaki?
Kind of. Dude, it was very weird. So at this time, I end up just going, okay, I need to, you know, I'm getting fired. I end up telling Xavier Woods, who I was living with at this time, and I go, hey, man, I said, they're getting rid of me. And he goes, no. He goes, well, he goes, if they are, he goes, let's just make like a last-ditch effort of like, let's give them everything you got. He goes, well, I'll come over. And he's if you know anything about Woods, he knows everything. Yeah. And he knows everything. At the time, he was messing around with Photoshop for fun, and he knew how to put all these videos together. He knew how to do all this stuff, all this editing, everything. And so he goes, just come up, take the day, come up with like 10 different characters, everything. He said, just come up with different looks, different names, different everything, and we'll just make these like little vignettes and send them in. And I think at the time, actually, I got a staph infection. So I was out for like 3 weeks. And so I go, I'm gone for 3 weeks, and when I come back, I'm getting fired. So I end up going home, come up with like 10 characters, all different, ranging from like some French dude who's this crazy painter and all this other stuff. And we end up filming three. Dude,
what was
the
French dude's name?
I think he was just called Pierre. The Crazy Painter. That was it. The Crazy Painter. Which we never filmed for him.
Man,
so
you were sitting on a winner.
Dude, who knows, man? Fashion police and here comes the painter, dude. So I end up coming up with three different ones. And he comes over and we go out in Tampa and we start filming. There was like a darker version of Mike Dalton who was like, you know, I don't know. It was like, I was like knocking over stuff and like I was bad or whatever. So we did that one. I actually thought it was kind of cool, but, you know, there wasn't much substance to it. I did one for Tyler Breeze, which I kind of based on like, initially it was Zoolander. And it was like, you know, he's just going to be this kind of like this. I've seen all these people come in for tryouts and I'd seen models come in and I'd seen athletes come in and they go, ah, oh, wrestling's easy. I can do that. And I've heard people say this, like, you know, I can do that. That's easy. And I've actually heard people, because I'd helped Norman Smiley train some people, and I would hear them say like, oh, yeah, you know, I watch Raw and Tuesday Night Smashdown all the time. And I just go like, man, they have like no clue. And it's kind of, it's kind of funny, man. And so I was like, man, I tried, you know, wrestling and, you know, I could do all these moves and I could do this and I could do that. Why don't I go the complete opposite and just be like this know-nothing who just goes, man, this is easy. I can do this.
Zoolander,
and yeah. Who knows, doesn't know a headlock, doesn't know any wrestling whatsoever. And I go, that's going to be Tyler Breeze. So I ended up filming that one, and there was some other one that we did, a snowboarder named Kale Cove. He was going to be real cool. Dude, real cool.
Cool Kale Cove.
Dude, he was the best. So,
wait a minute. Okay.
I'll tell you.
See your receipts.
Sorry.
I got no books of this stuff. Yeah. But so we ended up filming the Tyler Breeze one, and as we're doing it, we start having a blast with it. And the initial video is like really funny. It's just me like not even really getting interviewed or being like, whatever. Like, I don't know what's happening, and I spray myself in the face with hair spray and all this stuff, and we end up finishing and me and Woods just start laughing and we go, man, that's our favorite one, so they're definitely not going to pick that one. And I end up sending them in to, you know, everybody whose email I had, and the only person who got back to me was Dusty, and he goes, hey, you might have something with this Tyler Breeze one, let's talk when you get back. And I end up, you know, I'm out for two, three weeks, whatever it was, and I come back, and he goes, let's start doing promos as this and just kind of messing around with it and seeing if there's anything to it. Really, it was the only one that anybody liked. They thought it was kind of funny. I came up with these promos where I'd mess up everybody's names, and I was looking for a friend, team partner, and all this stuff. Like, I had no clue about anything. And I did these like fun little promos, and it kind of just started catching on. And Bill DeMott was in charge at the time, and he goes, "Hey, we want to, you know, let's do this. Let's test it out on a show." And I said, "No, I said I don't want to go like Mike Dalton in like just different gear and whatever. I said I want to wait till my name is Tyler Breeze. I want different music. I want it to have a completely different feel than everything else." And he goes, okay. So I had new gear ready. I had music ready. I had all this stuff ready. And then finally, when it was all ready to go, we started with it.
And then they fired you.
It was close. I started kind of doing some shows. They liked it. It was starting to work. And I think Triple H ended up getting kind of some eyes on it and said, hey, let's use this on NXT. And I had a little hand mirror at the time, like a little makeup mirror. And he goes, oh, that's kind of 80s. Like, it's kind of like we've done that.
Yeah.
And he goes, I think the selfie thing is really big right now. Like, why don't we switch it to a phone and then you could take selfies all the way to the ring? I go, yeah, that's cool. Like, let's do that. So I end up debuting, and it just kind of started rolling from there. Like, the production team was like, oh, man, we can put it up on the Tron. We can do all this stuff. And it just became super fun. And, you know, I really...
You know what's funny about it is, I've said this before, I know you're a Steel Panther fan as well. It's total Lexi.
Big time. Yeah. Big time.
The bass player of Steel Panther, which you kind of look like. And it's the same story with them, is they were at their wit's end as a band. They'd been in a million different bands. Nothing was sick. And they just said, screw it. We're just going to become a parody of an 80s band.
Really?
This is our last F chance. Nothing's going to ever happen in our careers.
Yep.
End up with the biggest thing they've ever done.
It's funny. Just hearing your story is like, it's like almost when your best work comes out as a performer and artist is when you almost like stop caring as
yes,
well.
That's exactly.
You and WCW.
Exactly.
I'm like, this point. Guy is having fun.
That's a great
And idea. I remember being just Johnny Curtis in Florida and just generic promos, generic guy, generic wrestler. Mm-hmm. And it's just really uncomfortable trying to portray yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you start doing this character, Fandango or Tyler Breeze, promos become easier. You're having fun. It's easier to go out there and make an ass out of this character. It's harder to go out there and just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like seeing you in WCW, I remember as a kid, this guy's having fun, you know, with the hair and the bodyguard. And I remember that because if you weren't just almost saying, it and you were just Chris,
right?
You know, like people wouldn't connect as much, I think. You know what I'm saying? Like, you almost said, screw it.
Let's I just, did say, screw it. If you watch the 17 months previous to that, when I was doing nothing, I was just
busting your ass, faceless. Yeah.
Loser boy.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't
Mike Dalton, dude. Johnny Curtis, yeah. Mike Dalton. It's the same thing.
Original Lionheart, Chris Jericho. Exactly. I remember one day I was so frustrated. I did this with my hair. I had really long hair. And I'm like, you know, rubbing it up and down. And I looked up in the mirror. It was greasy. And stuck straight up.
Yeah.
I just walked out like that.
And I remember that right now.
Right?
Yeah. Right now.
Yep. That's the reason why. I was so stupid.
If you were all nervous and had that hair perfect... Yeah. And you wanted to go out and have this perfect match and look perfect, I probably wouldn't remember that awesome arm drag you did, but I remember your ridiculous hair.
Yeah, exactly. That's how
crazy this business is.
We'll probably be remembered for some dressing up as cops.
Yeah.
You know, like,
wrestling. It's really weird, like, you know? The yin to the yang. Like, everything that I can't do in my personal life, Tyler Breeze can do and does.
That's right.
So it's kind of cool. Yeah. It, like, completes you as a weird, like,
But let's thing. Talk about this. When you guys came and went, you both had ups and downs, and then they put you together, and you can tell this is the most fun you're having.
Yeah.
In the fine tradition of the New Age Outlaws, just two dudes they put together, New Day, two dudes, you got nothing going on. Next thing you know, you get this chemistry. So how was this put together for Zango?
April of last year, around European tour time, I believe, to April 2016. We were doing a deal where it was at Goldust.
I was with Truth, and you were with Goldust?
Yeah, and they're like, right.
Yeah.
We both turned on our partner and worked a program with Goldie and... with Goldie and Truth, and then we just I think it was pretty much, hey, these two guys aren't doing anything. We need someone for Goldie.
We were very much the other side of the important part.
So we were two guys put together.
We were the butts of the joke to the funny guys.
Yeah. And then fast forward a few months later, we worked with them, did some funny skits, brand split. They stay on Raw. We go to SmackDown. So now that was kind of the origin of us, is working with those two. Now we're over here on SmackDown. And when was the draft? July-ish?
About a year ago. Yeah.
So now we're on SmackDown, and we weren't really doing too much.
Nothing.
We weren't really doing too much for a while, yeah.
We were actually doing nothing, and then, like, just random little things here and there, but not TV, no nothing. And you end up hurting your knee.
Yeah, I had meniscus surgery in October of 16.
And so right away, I was like, okay, well, like, now what are we doing? Like, I don't know how long Dango's out. And, like, it was funny because at the time, we hear anywhere from he's out for 2 weeks to 16 weeks.
Oh.
And so I go, well, what should we do? And one of the writers actually sits down. He goes, let's start, you know, just coming up with some stuff. And for whatever reason, he mentioned something about Fashion Police. And I went, oh, that could be, like, we could pull that off. Mm-hmm. That could be kind of funny. But, like, how do we get there? Like, what do you do? And so Dango, I think, was gone for maybe a TVs or two. Like, you weren't gone for long.
Yeah, I came back in 4 weeks because I'm a badass.
But I thought, like, all right, let's get this started.
I didn't want to miss the European tour because it's
too much of a brother time.
I honestly told my rehab people, hey, man, we got... It was like October, and we were leaving for Europe at like the 1st of November, and I'm like, I need to make this Europe tour.
Yep.
Because all the guys are going over, and they got beer on the bus.
Yeah. I can't miss it.
So I came back like 2 or 3 weeks early just to make the Europe tour, remember?
Just a brother.
We did. It was so, you know, we have WWE.com, which, you know, some guys utilize, some guys don't utilize, but you really kind of have carte blanche on there.
Absolutely.
You can go on there and do whatever you want. And
that's a good thing, and that's a good point for Breeze, is I would get frustrated after working with you and kind of not doing things. Instead of just sitting in the back bitching about not being on TV, Breeze being proactive kind of, dude, let's shoot some promos. This .com, like, they'll do them whatever you want.
Right.
And, like, to not take advantage of that, and that was on me, just sometimes people just sit around.
It's
or
easy
they
to
tweet,
do that, though. It's easy
I'm not on TV.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
You know what? If you're not on TV...
get on TV, man.
Do something about it.
You know,
I hate that shit.
Along the same lines, we're talking about how a lot of similarities. In 96, 97, when I was the nameless faceless baby face that never got promo time, instead of hanging all day in catering or whatever the hell we did, I would go sit. They used to have this thing called the promo box.
Yeah.
And it was where they would do localized promos back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Penticton, we're coming to your town.
Yeah.
Me and Gene and a cast of characters, whatever it was, Sting, Arn Anderson, Luger, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
They would come, and I would just sit in the back and watch them all. That guy's great. He's okay. That guy sucks, whatever. And lo and behold, one day, Luger didn't show up because he went to the gym. Like, what about this guy? He's always here. Me?
Yeah.
Sure, I'll do one with you, Lee Marshall. And it sucked.
Yep.
But next time they gave me two. And that's how I learned how to do promos, because I didn't want to just sit around and wait for somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. It's weird. It's very easy to fall into like the you're entitled, and it's like, oh,
they can come
up with some for me, and if they don't,
And I was guilty of doing that myself, having the boo-boo face.
Before you came into the top level.
And I wish I could go back and have the mindset that I have now back then. So instead of sitting around being bitter, dude, there's these cameras, and then Breeze and I get together, and we just start shooting promos, because what do we got to lose? Yep. And it was fun, we're doing on-the-fly promos about being sexy cops. Remember that?
We came up with, Saturday Night Live skits. Hey, let's not even worry about wrestling. It was, when Dango was out, it was like, okay, I'm looking for Dango. Well, obviously, if I'm looking for him, I'm going to be a cop. I'm a detective. I'm figuring out what's happening.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for him, and then he's back the next week. So then all of a sudden, I'm looking for him. I'm desperate for him. And then he just goes, hey, man, I've been around. And I go, oh, thank God you're okay. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, I'm in the dumps. I need to be cheered up. Who's there? All of a sudden, the curtain's open, and Dango's found his own cop outfit. And now all of a sudden, I go, I'm getting mine, dude. I'm going to go get mine. So now we just kind of keep rolling.
Just keep shooting the dot-coms, and then eventually...
people saw them.
They liked them. The writers liked them. And they're like, why don't we throw these on SmackDown? Yep. And then we just started... So that's a great lesson for everybody and myself is if you don't like where you're at in life or wrestling, just do something.
Because
I'm not pointing the finger and saying that I didn't do it myself, sit around, but it kind of irritates me now that people that aren't on TV, it's like, dude,
why should you be?
Who has ever tweeted being bitter about not being booked and them looking at it and go, you know what? They're upset they're not on TV. We better put them on.
Can you imagine having another job or something somewhere and you're like, man, I got the night shift today. And you tweet it out you're coming to be like, what are you
job
doing?
Again?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
If you're an actor and your job is to, get shot in the movie, you get shot.
Yeah.
I got shot again? How many times am I going to die in this movie?
Let's write a petition to, come on, man.
So did you get a lot of input from Triple H and Vince on this? This is right up Vince's alley as far as the entertainment side.
Initially, it was just kind of us doing those dot-coms with the, just having fun. And once they kind of put on SmackDown, we did a couple things here, a couple things there. And we actually got helped out a lot by just some random people, here and there, like Miz helped us. He's always, being proactive and filming stuff. And he goes,
right,
I want you guys in this. So we get more eyes on us there. John and Nikki actually really wanted to, they go, man, I don't know why they're not using you guys yet. Like, you guys are funny and you're doing this stuff.
Super entertaining, yeah.
So all of a sudden we roll around to the time where I dress up like Nikki Bella. And, Dango's wrestling Cena out of nowhere. And we have a promo and he's wrestling Cena and I'm wrestling Nikki. And then, they're going to beat us up. And that was strictly because they go, hey, we want to help these guys out.
Yeah.
And you can't buy that type of help from people. Like those guys saying, hey, we want to
work with them. Just as a segue, I did pitch a segment for us tonight backstage. But I don't think it's going to happen. But I did pitch
it. But still, that's...
it'd be fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
How fun would it be? Because you guys, that's what the business is. Yes, it's about great matches, but it's also about characters that connect with the audience.
Yeah.
Like, all my friends love Breezango.
Yeah.
Because you guys are fun.
And so that's the thing is if everybody in the back is going, man, they should use you guys. You guys are fun to hang out with and you're funny, but nobody ever sees it and nobody reaches out and tries to help us,
I think Road Dogg's probably helped us out
the
most, because I think he sees what he went through, just being a guy that wasn't really doing a lot, and and then
he was always in our corner, like wanting stuff to happen, and he would tell us all the time, just be patient. Things take time.
Yeah, things take time. Well, you got to get over with the boss. That's how it is.
Yeah.
And you only have 2 hours, on SmackDown. We only have 2 hours, and it fills up quick. And if there's not, hey, this is the priority, then you might be lucky to squeak in there, and you might not be.
Let's talk about the fashion files, where I noticed that you put the pictures up on the wall and stuff. How do you guys, how do you get with that?
That's actually one of my favorite parts, and it's kind of one of those things where it just happens, and when we show up, they've put all these subtle little Easter eggs in, and we show up, and we'll just stare at the board for a while and be like, oh, that's fine. That's cool. They came up with this one today,
Yeah.
What are some good ones?
Chimmel is always on there. He's our go-to. He's been on every week.
Chimmel's always on the board. Chimmel.
Michael Hayes has made his way up there several times.
Michael.
I think I was up there early, missing or something like that. Someone was telling about that.
What else have we had? Enzo.
Well, now
there.
We just did.
What did Enzo like?
Somebody. Some oh, because he kept getting attacked on Raw, and it said out of our jurisdiction.
Yeah.
We're not allowed.
We'd like to help, but we can't.
That's county lines, man. That's county lines. Yep. We're not allowed over the red line.
Yeah. It was the best, though, because like nobody's really off limits. Like the first one we did, I think.
It's kind of a cool
little shots up there, and we're like, all right, cool. Yeah,
it's kind of a cool little inside thing. A little Easter egg to
people
the fans.
People look for it once they notice it. People love it, you know? And now you guys have progressed, and now you're dressing up every week in a different outfits and different
ideas.
Are they telling you this is what you're going to do this week? Are you kind of thinking about different things that you want
to
do?
It was kind of a – so it was a natural progression, obviously. Everything has to evolve. But the first one was Law & Order. They wanted, you know, hey, it's kind of cool. Let's parody Law & Order. And we did, I don't know, two or three episodes of that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they said, hey, this is really good, but we've already started putting together some intros for other shows. Like, let's not just say Law & Order. Let's do everything. And so now, you know, we've
kind of – Miami Vice.
X-Files. And we've touched
Walker,
on all this
Texas
stuff.
Ranger.
Oh, my God.
That was ridiculous.
And, and that's kind of thing, man. We can do anything.
Right.
We're kind of in that untouchable category.
What do you do, though, when you're in the ring so it's not just complete comedy, though?
It's got to be a mix.
Yeah.
It has to be a perfect mix of the initial – they come out. They want to see us. You know, let's make them laugh a little bit. And then once they – you know, they like us, that we're the funny guys. And then once we start getting beat up, then they go, okay, let's see you guys, you know, fight back. And that's where you need to add in the other part.
Because you're both really good workers too, which is why there's a lot there to that as well.
It's – yeah, I think – comedy bell to bell necessarily, especially if you're wrestling the Usos for the tag team championships.
Overstated welcome.
If you don't have that credibility and the people are like, these guys are clowns, then the Usos are beating up clowns and there's no way we're going to beat them because we're a joke. So I think we sprinkle in, like the match we had in Chicago, the little haha, but then once it gets serious,
you gotta have them believe
we're
that
done,
we're gonna win.
You know, right. You know, and then it's go time, and then that's when we kind of lose the deals, the costumes, and then we get into what we can do, and that's work. You know,
and that's where it's kind of trial and error too. Of like, even in that match, you can see by the end, like the people are on their feet, being like, "Please, like, they can
win."
That shows us that, like, okay, we didn't overstay our welcome with the comedy stuff. I'm dressed up like a janitor and a grandma, but they're still Dango's. You know, he's hitting some tornado DDTs and whatever else, and they're going, "Oh my, they're gonna win." They're 100%. Believed that we were going to win.
Do you want to tell him the story about how the Chicago match? So we win the number one contendership. So we win the number one contendership, and we're working the Usos in Chicago, and we're all excited because this is the first big. You know, we've been working. This is from .com stuff we've been shooting. So we've been working really hard to get to this point. So Breeze and I were talking before we get to Chicago, like, man, we got to tear it up. We got to show the boss and everyone that, you know, we can go out and tear it up. So I'll tag you in here.
This was almost do or die for the gimmick. Like, it was like, if we don't have a good showing here, like, I don't know if you come back from this.
Yeah, right.
And pay-per-view Chicago, of course the crowd's going to be hot. They're going to love it. And we start, you know, kind of putting ideas together of like, oh man, it's going to be this gritty tag team match with this, you know, what
good wrestling. Yeah, I want to do some good wrestling.
All this stuff.
Hip toss, kick me off, get it again, you know, like
think about this dramatic.
We just want to show them we can go, you know, like
think about this big dramatic match where the people are on the edge of their seat and somebody's handcuffed and it's just, you know, we're cops, so why wouldn't we have handcuffs? And someone's getting beaten down and the people are just going, "Come on." And we got this idea in our head of like, all right, this is going to be cool. And they go in. We go, okay, how about this? No. We go, oh, all right. Well, then what do we do? And it just kind of got pitched as like a normal, like, okay, normal match. And we go, oh, man, like that's kind of a letdown. So now we're kind of like, all right, this will still be like, okay, but it's not what we had envisioned. So then we end up going like, okay, well, we don't know what exactly was pitched, so let's just double check and make sure this was the right thing. So we end up going in and talking to Vince ourselves, and we pitch it again, and it gets shut down again. Like, no, and it's kind of funny because it's the, you know, everybody explains the way that Vince does things, where you're like, oh, he's kind of going for this, and then all of a sudden you're back to like, okay, you guys have a good normal match out there, and we'll see it. And we go, what? We're like, all right. So now we're back to the same thing. I'm like, all right, what should we do? So we're starting to put together a match, and he goes, hey, Vince wants to see you guys again.
And it's getting late in the day. It's doors are at like 6, right?
We were maybe an hour and a half before the show started right now. Right.
So we kind of got an idea we want to do. We changed it. Now we're trying to figure out what we're going to do before the doors open.
Yep.
It's getting to that time of the day where you got to get your shit together.
And he goes, he wants to see you. He wants to call you back in. So we're all walking to the office, and we go, oh, man, maybe he came around. Maybe we're having this match. So now our hopes are up again. And we go, we sit down. And we started here and we ended up miles away. Is we sit down and Vince looks at me and he goes, you know, I just watched the Fashion Files. And he goes, you were dressing up. You were dressing up like a janitor, a girl. You had all this stuff. And he goes, I want that. And we go, we all look at each other like, what do you mean? And he goes, I want an entertainment match. I want bell-to-bell entertainment. Wow. And so we're all looking at each other going, how can we do this? And Usos being the tag champs, and they're kind of, you know, they're on a roll. They're doing good.
Yeah.
And they go, how are we supposed to get heat on them? And Vince just goes, maybe there is no heat. And we all look at each other, what? No heat in a tag match, like a tag title match in Chicago. Yeah. Yeah, and now all of a sudden we're starting to slump in our chairs like.
Well, me, I was smiling.
I go, we're about to stink the joint out in Chicago, dude. Like,
So we left there. We got an hour before the show, and we're like, this is either going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Or awful. It was one of those deals. Like, it's going to be great, Dango, or really, really bad.
You specifically looked at me and you go, I think this is a rib. And I go, I don't know, man. And I full out went into pout mode. And I was sitting on the ground, and Usos were sitting there, and they're kind of smiling. And then they're like, so Breeze, what do you think of this and this? And I go, I don't know, man. I have no clue. I don't even know how to start to put this thing together.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, we all just kind of clicked and hit this groove of like,
we're like, you know what? We're going to do this.
Yeah.
So instead of just, let's get over it. This is what he wants.
Right.
Let's just go out there and make it the best we can.
Yep.
We go out there. Honestly, it was the best, one of the best matches I've had.
It couldn't have
and
been
we come
better.
Back and I just, he's smart, man. Vince, he knew. Yeah. He knew.
He's a smart
guy, man.
Even like going back to when he told me to work with you, and I had this Ryback thing in my head, and actually it was like, it was a taker. I was like, what am I supposed to do? He's never had a match. And he goes, well, do it. Because it's what Vince wants.
Yeah.
And so once you're like, yeah, it is what he wants, and then you put your mind to it, and suddenly it becomes great.
Yeah.
Because if all of us did whatever we wanted to do, it would be WCW where there's no boss.
Yeah,
everyone's just doing whatever the f*** they want to do, and it turns into a big cluster.
Yeah.
The boss is smart.
Yeah.
And that's
what is the reason why he's been doing so well.
Exactly.
You know?
With all the successes with all of us.
It really couldn't have worked out better.
It's a good learning lesson.
Like as we put it together.
Yeah, good learning lesson. Yeah.
As we put it together, we actually started smiling and laughing and having a blast, being like, this might work, man.
Yeah.
And as we're out there and like, you know, the people are chanting, let's go grandma, or Dango starts doing stuff, and the people were literally thinking we were gonna win.
Yeah.
And we come back and it was like the only standing ovation that I've got in Gorilla of everybody, and they go, great job. Great job. And they go, great job. And we go, man, that was way better.
Great.
The,
yeah. And you know what? We didn't even take that many bumps.
Yeah.
No.
It's amazing how the business works.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
I go, I didn't learn this part in wrestling school. Like, dress up like a janitor and whatever.
That was a fun night.
Last couple of things. We're talking about these great characters that you guys are playing on Southpaw.
Mm.
Chet Chetterson. What's the inspiration?
Cheddarfield.
Sorry,
Chief
said
you
get it wrong.
Damn it, man!
Actually, come on, Bosky!
I even said that on the show, and Chet is like, it's Cheddarfield.
Damn it, it's Bosky, Cheddarfield.
Man. Bosky's losing it.
Is that based on somebody?
No,
I Bobski on Ed Whalen.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
Honestly, the first time we shot Southpaw, John and I went in and sat down, and I literally just kind of came up with it on the fly, and just I didn't have that much verbiage, so I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna act like I'm drunk the whole time.
Cheddarfield's Europe Dango.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
want to look as shitty as possible, you know.
Mission
but it just as we kept filming, I kind of figured out who this guy was,
and
he's a dirtbag, and then, and then on the next season, which we just aired the rest of it today, you're gonna figure out why Chet is Chet. Why is this guy such a dirtbag? And then
it's damaged, man.
You're gonna figure out on the next
Where'd you get Mr. McElroy from?
You know, they kind of pitched the deal of, you know, hey, you're the evil banker. And I go, oh, cool, man. Like, yeah, I love stuff like this. And they go, what's the name? They say, oh, don't know. You got to come up with one. And I don't know how the brain works, man. Like, you just come up. All of a sudden, it's McElroy. That's the one. And they go, what, really? I said, yeah, Mr. McElroy.
My two favorite lines in the first one was, Clint is a piece of shit. And two was, he's a creature from the sea. I call him the sea creature. Both those things. Because when we filmed last time, I had no idea what was going on. I just thought,
like
10 cents in here or there. But to watch it back, I was howling at how great everybody was.
The whole show, man.
This guy was better than the next.
It was great. Yeah, everybody. The whole show from start to finish is
really
it's
well
fun
done.
To watch.
Really well done.
Actually why I'm here today, was to film that show, Southpaw, and to talk to you guys. And now I got roped into having a match.
You came for Southpaw, stayed for SmackDown, man.
We got him here.
What's your last question? What's your favorite match you ever had start with you, Breeze? Is the one that stands out?
I mean, there's a bunch that stand out. I would probably say the one that gets brought up the most. Two. I got narrowed down to the Fatal 4-Way that I have for NXT. With Neville, Sami Zayn, Tyson Kidd.
For the title?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That one kind of is, I would say, the performance one. Yeah. In terms of like, hey, we were the main event. A lot of pressure on us, and it delivered. It's mm-hmm. one of the ones that kind of gets remembered. But then, you know, working in Brooklyn with Liger was, you know, one of...
I bet you Liger really liked your gimmick.
He was the coolest.
Yeah. He
like,
gets that.
Even just, you know, him being him, like, he's, you know, in a category of his own.
Yeah.
And I'm telling him, like, hey, man, I said, if you want to grab the selfie stick and do whatever, and he goes, oh...
Really?
And I said, of course. I said, and he goes, thank you. I said, no, thank you. Like, this is cool, man. I said, do whatever you want. And he was smiling the whole time, like, just having a blast. And I loved working with him.
He gets it.
And it's also kind of cool, you know, just a little side note for me of like, hey, man, he's worked here once. And I was the guy who worked.
You were the one guy, yeah.
You know what I mean? Who knows if he comes back and works again.
That's a lot of trust for the office to put you with Liger.
Exactly.
They don't want to have him come in and have a stinker or whatever.
Exactly. Right? And that was actually the first time that we had the big show in Brooklyn in front of, you know, 15,000, 16,000 people.
Park Center, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a huge deal. That's and that cool, one yeah. kind of holds a special place for me.
How about you, Daniel?
I think it was 2009. I got to work a summer with my best friend Joe Henning, and
nice.
Yeah, we had some matches for Dusty down in FCW, and it's something different, which you probably know about working with Lance. When you work your like best friend, you're not afraid to give some potatoes. But we were still learning at the time, you know, trying to figure out how to structure TV matches because we just started doing TV in Florida. So trying to hit our breaks and time cues and.
Oh, yeah.
It was a cool learning experience to come back with one of your best friends and have that feeling that you knew you just had a good match.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, so getting to share that with one of your close friends and then going out and have a couple beers after.
It's cool.
Those are, I remember those moments. For sure.
All right, dudes. Well, it's time for us to go out there. I think I heard that Matthias Wild versus the Portuguese Sundrop.
And I'm going over.
Yeah, we want people to stay, right?
Whether you like it or not.
A big Portuguese market here.
Yeah.
In Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Breezango, Tyler Breeze, and Fandango. Fandango, Fan Dodge Durango, Fan. I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango? I love that. I had a great time with those guys. And there are new episodes of Southpaw Regional Wrestling coming up very soon. You can find them first season on YouTube. Very funny stuff. Speaking of funny, Team Tiger Awesome. Hilarious. Ridiculous headlines. Here you go.
And now it's time for the Modern Farmer. This week, aphids. Aphids were first thought of as the scourge of the sea. Ancient mariners lost many ships to the cavernous bellies of the aphid. Pirates first brought them ashore in 16th century Central and South America as a bloody rebuke against the greed and corruption of the old world landed gentry. But that's ancient aphid history. How do aphids affect the modern farmer? Let's ask one.
There's leaves. There's just leaves on everything, you know. And so what, I'm supposed to look on the underside of every damn leaf for these damn aphids? Because I got 60 hours in my days? No, I can't. And then you can't spray them off because they just hold on. So the hose to... Who taught ants to harvest bugs that are on the underside? Damn it.
For more of the Modern Farmer, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network, right here on Podcast One.
Subscribe to the Team Tiger Awesome Show at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review. Leave all the Jericho Network podcasts 5-star ratings and reviews at Apple Podcasts. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. The Raven Effect. Great stuff from Raven. If you haven't checked out this podcast, it's one of my favorites I listen to. And the Flagship Show, Keeping It 100 with Conan. Beyond the Darkness, giving you a paranormal fix every weekday with brand new episodes Monday through Friday. And big thank yous to all the great sponsors of Talk is Jericho. A&E, Season 2 of A&E's groundbreaking docuseries, Leia Remini's Scientology in the Aftermath, Season 2 premiering August 15th. Don't forget TrueCar and Geico for your vehicular needs. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And on Wednesday, who do we got on Wednesday? Oh, it's good. WWE Women's Champion Naomi is going to be here. Yeah, you want it, you got it. Feel the glow with Naomi here on Wednesday. Have a great weekend. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy, to all of you and yours.
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.